Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to The Conversation. My name is Kim Morrison, and we're here, as usual, with the author of Survive the Next 365, Clark Garrison, on which the show is based. Hi, Clark. How are you?
I am wonderful, Kim, as usual. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Better than my husband because he's a Falcons fan right now.
Oh, yeah. They are having some issues right about now. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he's struggling. Yeah, so he's struggling. Well, what's the conversation about today, Clark?
We are going to discuss, hopefully in some great detail, entrepreneurship. You know, one of the biggest things I've found out is that many people don't or won't or can't work for themselves. And hopefully we've got a wonderful panel coming on, as well as another gentleman we'll bring on in a few minutes to discuss and kind of get some insight on the how, what, and when's.
And I know you have great insight on it, being a entrepreneur yourself for so many years. I know you're one of those people that, have you ever worked for anyone else? I had
you
to think
what?
About that.
I did a brief stint with Nike as an operations manager in the Southeast for maybe 2 years, maybe. And that would probably be the longest time, yeah, that I've actually worked in a more formal, you know, quote-unquote corporate American environment. And I hated it, by the way.
Oh, really? You know, and I've always worked in corporate America for quite a many years. And I don't know, I'm an old Southern girl. I like the steady check.
With Southern values, you got to love
them. Yes. I like, you know, because I grew up with parents who said, you know, get a job. So I understand when people have that mentality about, you know, being an entrepreneur. And there's a certain amount of fear with that, I think, with certain people, especially people in our community, because you have this fear that what if it doesn't work? You know, what if it doesn't, you know, pan out? So how do you combat that fear?
Well, you know, I read a book a while. You ever heard of a gentleman called Burke Hedges?
No.
He wrote a book at that time, a very obscure book, but he's gone on to be a pretty good notable speaker around the country. But he wrote a book called You Can't Steal Second with Your Foot on First. And to be honest, I read this many moons ago. I'd only read it because of the title. The title was just, you know, so fascinating. I just had to, you know, I think somebody had it, and I said, you know, I got to see what it's about. But the biggest thing he talks about is free enterprise and the lack of, in other words, and I think his background, he's from Cuba and wealthy family. Obviously, when the Castro regime took over, they took possession of everybody's wealth. So they came to America with nothing. And over a period of time, they rebuilt their wealth. And so he wrote a book to really emphasize that here in America, we have such liberties to do so, and many of us don't take that opportunity.
Because actually, when you think about it, free enterprise, and I don't want to give people the wrong impression, especially women that are listening, go out there, do your thing, you know, own your own businesses. I actually do own my own business. I just, because of who I am, I probably work three times as hard because I work in corporate America and run a business. So I don't want to give anyone the impression to not do that. But what we can say is free enterprise is probably what's hindering our economy right now, because we have a lack of it, as opposed to in latter years when there were so many new businesses and so many independent businessmen out there, or businesswomen as well. Will you agree with
sure.
that?
I would agree wholeheartedly. And I even think I heard Warren Buffett on a talk show one night say that the biggest way we're going to come out of this quote-unquote recession or slowdown of economy is through free enterprise. So you're absolutely right about that. And I wanted to throw this out there because this always struck with me. This is a little quaint little thing Burke Hedges kind of gave us a synopsis of. He took our systems or systems that are out there, communism, socialism, and capitalism. He said these are the differences. So see if this makes sense to you. It's kind of funny in a way. Communism, you own two cows. The government takes both and gives you part of the milk. Okay? Socialism, you own two cows. The government takes one and gives the other to your neighbor. In capitalism, you own two cows, you sell one and buy a bull.
Wow.
Thus creating more and more.
Exactly.
Right. And I tell you, that little, if you think about it, it takes a minute because it doesn't kick in until about 15 minutes later. You're like, oh, I get it. But it really is symbolic of the system we're supposed to be in, a capitalistic society. But again, how many of us really take possession of that? And I even added one in the book, How to Survive the Next 365. I kind of add that, but I add one called jobism. And that's when your employer owns two cows. He pays you a dime to milk the cows and sells the milk for a dollar. That's what most of us are in.
Yeah.
That's what most
Absolutely.
Of us are in. We're getting pennies for our value and our worth. And meanwhile, the true capitalists in our society are robbing us. So.
And again, I so believe that is such a fear to go away from that system. Because even if you had, let's say, you are making, like, because I always have this theory, you know, we're all working, if we're working for other people, we're making money for those people. So we're making those other people rich, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So, but the challenge is for someone who has never had any influence of business owners in their homes or communities. They don't have, you know, any role models or people that, you know, surround them that live that life. So they don't have any examples to go by. They only have, you know, everyone in my family is either a teacher, postal worker. no, and this is reality. You know, teacher, postal worker, work at, you know, whatever the major company is in that community. Some places it's Prudential, some places it's CSX. Some places it's the phone company, post office. If those are your influence, if those are the people in your eyesight or in your, you know, view have the successful lives, you know, how do you create a new perception? Where do you go with that? And that's what I'm hoping our guests can help, you know, listeners filter through, not just the process of, you know, becoming an entrepreneur. You have an idea, you make it work for you, you make it feed your family, you make it, you know, be your financial gain. But beyond the process of it, how did they get past that mental block, if they even had it? And if they didn't have the block, what caused them not to have it? Because I know from my experience, I live in the Midwest, so the majority of people around me, they just work. You know, they just have a job. You know, they don't even look beyond having, you know, even a career or, you know, a business of their own or creating a lifestyle. They just have a job because they just want to maintain. How do you get beyond that? That's what I'm hoping they can answer for our guests today. And I know we have quite a few people that we hope during this conversation will log on, but the first person I know we have on is Hinton Battle. And if you want to tell a little bit about Hinton, or would you like Hinton to explain to our listeners himself who he is?
I'll give him his just due, since I've known this young man, and I use that term loosely, for 20 years or so.
I know
Mr. Battle is a lifetime business owner, you know, again, who I've had the pleasure of knowing, honestly, for over 20 years now, I believe. And I'll go ahead and put this out in honor of you. He's also an FSU alum. And currently he is the owner of Battle One, Inc. And without further ado, we can bring on Mr. Hinton Battle.
Well, good afternoon.
Mr. Battle, pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, very much. I'm delighted for having the opportunity to have a chance to talk on your show.
Oh, absolutely. We're just going to bug you for a little bit, and then we'll put you back in queue, and we'll be speaking with Mr. Coleman in just a minute. As Kim said, Mr. Battle, what do you think? Why do you think, and you said this before, Kim, The bigger problem is within our community. Why do you think African Americans typically don't migrate to being business owners?
Ken made a valid point. We all, I don't care who we are, we're influenced by things that we can touch. Whatever we can reach out and touch, we come apart. You know, we look at it in our community on the other end. You know, a lot of guys inspire to be one of three things, they say. Either a drug dealer or an athlete. And the third and most important thing is a dropout. If I see my friend dropping out, I'm a dropout. If I knew my uncle or my cousin or everybody else in the neighborhood sold the drugs, get the money, I'd do it. But if I knew a guy can jump high, run fast, and get paid for it, not go to college, but get paid for it, that's what they think about more, that's what we want to do. So anything we can touch a lot of times inspires us to do certain things.
And that's amazing because you just put a framework on our communities. Even today, all the progress we've made, we still have those same frameworks in our community today. Because if you don't have, like, the guy, like your uncle was the barbershop owner, you still do not have an influence of someone who owns a business, really, in our communities. You're so right.
Correct. And I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kim.
No, and I was saying, as African-American men, how do you both fight that in your lives? How do you both, you know, put out a different image? What do you guys do to combat that for young men who are around you?
Well, the one way I combat it is being an athlete, too, what you try to do, you try to spot talent. Now, talent ain't always the best player, but talent is the player who's willing to learn and follow. Same way in business. So when I see kids that I deal with in high school or in college, and I see them in small things, they dress up on, you know, pay attention to certain things, those kind of the kids that I seek out to go ahead and try to do some type of training.
Okay. And, you know, and I have to say from both of us knowing you, you do reach out. And I have to, anybody who's listening and you own a business or you aspire to own a business, one thing that I know Clark and I have always talked about on the conversation is don't be afraid to give back. And I know, Hinton, you do that often. You reach back a lot to pull people up, and I think that's so inspirational. Can you talk about one of your most rewarding experiences when you pulled someone up?
Most rewarding. I guess I wouldn't say most rewarding, but
Or memorable, maybe.
A memorable. had a young man who came to college. His grandmother and his mom then put him on the bus from Fort Lauderdale. Gave him $8, sent him to Florida A&M University. I actually met this young man by accident on the intramural field because my team was beating up on his team and a few other teams. I don't call no names. Back in the day. And so what he told me, the young man came and told me, he said, look, he said, I like your preparation that you do for your team. He said, I like how you discipline your team is. He said, but I like how you execute what happens. Now, I didn't know the kid was watching me. I just like beating up on the team, but that was, you know, kind of what I did. So when I started one of my ventures of doing promotions for a Fortune 500 company, teaching them how to promote products to African-Americans, he was the first kid I took. And I took him on. We went a 12-city tour. We went to, like, the Atlanta Classic, Florida Classic, Southern's Homecoming, Howard's Homecoming, and everything else. And that experience with him, with me just for that year, inspired him to go on to develop running a business. He's been in almost 40 states developing stuff. Now he's in California. And he always talks about, you know, me giving him the opportunity to go and see how to be your own person. So I think that's one I can say.
That's awesome. So, in other words, let's go back to what you just said. He liked the way you did three or four things you mentioned. Can you mention those again? That the young man, he admired you because you did four steps, I believe you said.
One was, he said, my preparation, because we didn't walk out on the field. You know, we got nature. Everybody got there on time. We going to warm up. Even though it's an intramural game, flag football game, you know what I mean, we were on that part. He talked about, you know, our desire or things that we did right there dedicated to win, you know what I mean, how we went about certain things. He talked about, like I said, my leadership, how I commanded certain things or how we did as a team. And the point of just winning, you know what I mean? The first part, you know, last part, just winning. I mean, a lot of people say it ain't all about winning. I'm just still trying to find that
it
guy
is.
Who came up with that saying. It's all about winning. Forget all that stuff.
It is.
It's all about winning.
So you walk into it. So you're saying you walked into it, you prepared yourself, you know, you made sure you had the discipline to do what you needed to do, but you walked into that situation with the win in mind.
Right, and straight follow through. You got
That's
to follow
awesome.
Through with it, you know. Yeah, got to follow through.
Yep.
That's awesome. Now, I do believe perhaps some of our other guests may be on the line. If you are, could you introduce yourself, especially someone whose last four digits are 1600? If you're one of our guests, introduce yourself.
Yes. Can you hear me? It's John Lima with Studio Clout Fine Art Gallery and Event Venue.
How are you, sir? How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good. And then we have another guest on the line, last four digits, 3615. If you can introduce yourself as well.
Yeah, that's
Good afternoon,
Coleman.
Everyone. It's DeMond Coleman. How's everybody doing out there?
Wonderful.
Good.
Awesome.
And, it was such a pleasure to have all of you gentlemen on. We're going to, Mr. Coleman, if you don't mind, we're going to steal from you just for a moment. And I first want to say I appreciate you taking time. I know you're very busy. You're probably on the road as we speak. So I do appreciate it. I know we spoke earlier. And just to give a little background, Mr. Coleman, you know, he's an entrepreneur since his youth. He's owned and operated. And he is a guru in network marketing and one of my mentors. So I want to welcome you to the conversation. And, Kim, let's get started with Mr. Coleman, and let's tag him for as much information as we can, and we'll get to our panel right after that.
Okay, great. Mr. Coleman, I know one of the key questions we have for you is, what is your joy in actually being an entrepreneur, you know, doing what your passion is? What's your joy in doing that as opposed to, you know, having a traditional 9-to-5?
Well, wow, I love this call, how natural it is, because I didn't get a chance to prepare for these questions. So I just have to get 100% real with you guys. And the first thing that comes to my spirit is serving.
Wow.
I love serve. I've always loved to serve since I was a child, and I had no idea as I got older, you know, that it would become so lucrative. But I have to say, being an entrepreneur, everything that I've ever done to make money, it's required me to serve other people. So that's my greatest joy. That's what stands out to me more than anything as an entrepreneur.
And that's a beautiful thing. And so if anyone's, and we always reach back out to the audience so that they can, you know, take heed to what our guests are saying. You've heard Mr. Battle talk about preparation, being prepared, and, you know, being disciplined to do what you're doing and to go for the win. But in addition to that, I know what both these gentlemen have stated that they do is they reach back and they serve. So make sure everyone remembers that when being an entrepreneur, you can't go into it with just the money in mind, because you just may fall short. And I appreciate that. Now, the next question we have for you is not necessarily a question, but we want the listeners to know exactly who you are. So can you explain a little bit about your business and who you are?
Absolutely. I muted my phone off so you guys can get all this background noise. I'm actually
That's okay.
Okay, awesome. Well, wow, man, where do I start? And goodness gracious. Well, I tell you what, I grew up a single parent. My mother was a single parent of 8 children, and my dad was actually a crack addict until I was about 13 years old. And having so many siblings, being the third oldest of 8, you know, no becomes a little bit irritating. You know, every time you ask your mom for $1.50 or something to go to the candy truck, and, you know, all you hear is no, not because your mom doesn't love you, but, you know, when you have so many mouths to feed, some of those luxuries are just not a necessity. And so I started off as an entrepreneur, 8, 9, 10 years old, cutting grass, raking leaves, shoveling snow, to start started selling candy in junior high school. And I mean, I don't know if this is okay with you guys, but I have to be transparent if we're going to help some people on this call today.
Yes.
And let you know that I also started selling drugs at the age of 15 years old. And, you know, the type of environment I grew up in, some of the toughest projects in St. Louis, Missouri, you know, that was a normal thing. It wasn't a matter if you were going to sell drugs. It was a matter of when.
When, yes.
When you were going to get started, when you was associated with my family, from my uncles to my dad, my brothers. Many of my friends got started when they was 13, 14 years old, and I started when I was 15, so I was considered a late bloomer. But at the age of 12 and 13, I started selling candy in junior high. I also started teaching myself how to cut hair. And became a self-taught barber my freshman year in high school. You know, I had a huge clientele. I do haircuts and texturizers in my dad's basement. And, my junior year in high school, started cutting hair in a professional barbershop with my oldest brother, who had retired from the streets at that time because he got shot up and, you know, wanted to do some things different. So he took me under his wing and, let's see, by the time I was 21, started investing in real estate, started flipping properties. I actually ran boarding houses where I was renting rooms out on a weekly basis, collecting the money weekly. Got into the mortgage business shortly afterwards as a mortgage broker. And then I shortly after that opened up my own barbershop and beauty salon. By the time I really gotten going professionally, I was pretty heavy in the drug game, and by the time I was 28 years old, all I was doing full-time was selling drugs, and got indicted by the federal government, and got sentenced to 3 years at Leavenworth Penitentiary Camp, and what can I say? My life really started to turn around for the better. I know some people might say, well, how in the world did that happen in prison? Well, sometimes God will slow you down just enough. Mm. You know, to get your attention and get you focused on the things that are really important in life. And for me, you know, it was my faith, my family, and my finances, you know, in that order. And so did a lot of reading on entrepreneurship. For the first time in my life, I accepted my gift as a barber because, you know, growing up, I thought that was always, you know, I sell drugs, but I'm also a barber. You know, it was like it wasn't something I was really proud of, you know, because cutting hair didn't make you the kind of money that the streets did. But, you know, when I was incarcerated and realizing how important it was to have a trade and something to fall back on when I got back out into society, you know, that was huge. You know, I was the camp barber. I taught other young men how to cut hair. Matter of fact, Anthony Turner just graduated in St. Louis from Barber College, a young man I took under my wings. And, you know, so for me, it was a real humbling process. I valued my skills that I've learned in business. I started teaching real estate in prison, taught how to cut hair in prison, got really involved with the church that we had there. And, you know, a lot of things happened for the better. When I got out, I hit the streets. I mean, like my life depended on it. Here it is 3.5 years later. I'm still doing that. But needless to say, I got started back in March 07 when I got released from Leavenworth Penitentiary and, you know, started cutting hair, giving away free haircuts and free hairstyles. I'm a master barber, but I'm also a master stylist. And that led me to a connection that I got to Korea where I was actually buying flat irons and blow dryers at wholesale price. At that time, those particular irons were brand new. That was something new to the hair care industry. So I made over $100,000 my first year out the federal penitentiary, you know, cutting and styling hair and selling these flat irons and blow dryers. At that time, I got invited back to that same Bronner Brothers hair show in Atlanta where I met Mr. Kim to work his booth as an independent contractor. And that's when a lady out of Houston, Texas, introduced me to network marketing. Getting involved because I understood network marketing. I got involved because I knew I could buy low and sell high. Once I wrapped my head around what it truly means to be in that industry, I started doing a lot of recruiting, started building business, and I was the first man in a 20-year company to hit the top of that company. Did that. It took me only 8 months to do it. Earned almost $500,000 in income my first 2 years in network marketing and made history with that company. That's where I had a chance to meet Mr. Clark Garrison, who's a phenomenal leader.
And he calls me a mentor, but, you know, just from being in his company and watching him, I've learned a lot. But, you know, that's in short. I mean, I don't know if that was a long answer or the short answer to the question, but just wanted to be transparent and just let people know that, hey, I mean, it don't matter where you come from or what you've been through, you know, if you have a strong enough desire, you know, and you get involved with the right company at the right time, you know, the sky's the limit. And so that's in short, I guess in short, that's me. That's my background. That's who I am. And
and whether it's short or long, it was in truth. So we thank you for that.
And DeMond, you know, obviously we know each other, and I know your story and always love to hear it because it's so powerful and inspirational. I'm going to ask you the same question we asked Mr. Battle is, why do you think so many African-Americans are fearful or hesitant about being in business for themselves as an entrepreneur?
I'm sorry, say it again, the last part.
Why do you feel like, in your opinion, I know statistics show that African-Americans, I guess for lack of a better word, they away from being business of themselves or being an entrepreneur. Why do you feel that is, just from your experience out there?
To sum it up in one word, and I will elaborate, but I have to say it's fear. And what's ironic about that is, you know, we are and have been – as African Americans, some of the greatest entrepreneurs in this country, from inventions to, you know, opening up our own businesses. I mean, I just believe that society, you know, the government has crippled a lot of African Americans when it comes to welfare, you know, when it comes to, these so-called good jobs, which I don't know what in the world a good job is these days, but, you know, I believe have become complacent, Mr. Garrison, and you know, but I have to say it's fear. You know, people, you know, a lot of people just don't like to take chances. Once they get the house and the two cars and the baby, and, you know, it's just complacency, and there's not enough leaders in our community, you know, who are leading by example from an entrepreneur standpoint. So I believe, you know, we're going to get back, but it's going to start with calls and shows like this, as well as individuals like ourselves out in the community making an impact.
Wow.
Wow. Well, I know we're going to be wrapping the segment up in just a second. Kim, did you have another question for Mr. Coleman just before we wrap up?
You know, what can I say after all that he said?
What can I say? That's why I love talking to him, because he gives it to you straight. You know, it's not diluted. It's straight from the heart.
Right, right. And there's nothing else to say to Mr. Coleman, but, you know, to all the gentlemen that are on the call, but thank you. You know, because although my son is lucky enough to have his father as an influence, he still needs other people out there that he can see that are like him, that are doing things that he aspires to be. So I just thank you guys for being who you are.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine.
And Mr. Coleman, before we let you go, and so you can drive with both hands on the wheel, tell us a little bit about your company and how someone can possibly get involved with what you're doing now.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Garrison. That company that I made $500,000 with in 2 years, I resigned about 30 days ago. And though it's a great company with great products, I'm an opportunist, and I'm not ashamed of that. I come from the dirt. I mean, literally. And so my mission is to set my family up for financial freedom. And I believe God has just blessed us with the best opportunity I've ever had my hands on, and that's the coffee business. I just partnered with an organic coffee company by the name of Organo Gold, and we have 100% organic coffee. Not just saying that because it sounds good. We have literally been approved by the USDA. And so it's a gourmet healthy coffee company. In fact, we are looking for business partners, those people who are interested. The only qualifications that you must have is that you must be teachable and coachable, and you must be available. And outside of that, that's it. And to find out more information, you can email me at Coleman, and that's C-O-L-E-M-A-N, dot DeMond, D-E-M-O-N-D, coleman.demond@gmail.com. That's coleman.demond@gmail.com. And just make sure you leave your name and the best number to reach at, and be more than happy to give you more details. But in short, it's easy, as simple as coffee. And I strongly believe that we're about to make network marketing history with this product and this opportunity.
Well, thank you so very much, Mr. Coleman. And we appreciate you again being on our show for this time. And we'll talk to you soon, sir.
God bless you all. Thank you for having me. It'd be my most pleasure to do it again. And just to let you guys know, my dad, who was a crack addict until I was 13 years old, owns his own real estate company now as a trustee at the church and a very respectable man in the community. And so, like I said, your desire has to be greater than every circumstance that's going on in your life, and you will succeed. Thanks again, and God bless.
Thank you. Well, there you go, Kim. Segment one is over, and I'm scared of part two.
Right. I'm scared of segment two. That, you know, we went to service this morning. I just feel like I came back from a second service. Oh, my gosh. That is just
That's
awesome. It's so inspirational, too. I love to hear when men in our community, you know, do what they're destined to do. And don't just sit back on what they see, because that's God ordained. You're not, you know, governed by what you see, but by what He sees in you. And I just think that's amazing. That's great.
Well, excellent. You want me to introduce our panel, or should I?
You can do your thing.
All right. Well, we for those who are just tuning in, you're listening to The Conversation. And we have a wonderful show today about entrepreneurship, and we have three awesome gentlemen that are going to serve as a panel where we can get to grill them and ask them 6,000 questions, or as many we can do in 30 minutes, on how one can get started, pitfalls, the pros and cons, all those wonderful things that you may have always wanted to know and were either scared to ask or didn't know who to ask. So on our panel today, we have Ms. Hinton Battle, who again is of the company, his own company, Battle 1-8. I'll reiterate that I've known this gentleman for over 20 years. He's an FSU alum, and ever since I've known him, he's always worked for himself. I can't imagine Hinton ever working for anyone. So maybe you could tell us a little later if he's ever worked for anybody other than himself, which I doubt seriously. But welcome to the show, Mr. Battle.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. And we also have Mr. John Lima, who is the co-owner, along with his lovely wife, of a wonderful fine arts gallery here in the Castleberry District of Atlanta. And the name of that gallery is The Clout. So we want to welcome to the show Mr. John Lima.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't know, I got one more gentleman. I'm not sure if he's on, but I'm going to introduce him anyway. I've also known this gentleman for at least a decade. He's been involved in real estate in one aspect or another for over a decade. He's the founder and owner of Skybreeze, Inc., Mr. Carlos Kane. Are you online, Mr. Kane?
Yeah, appreciate the clock. Yes, I am.
Yes, sir. So we got all three of our prestigious gentlemen on, and I want to welcome you all through the show. So, Kim, if you don't mind, I'll get us started. Anyone can answer this, and you know, just kind of, if you feel like this is a question that you can add some valuable information and shoot out an answer. But I want to ask each one of you, what got you started for working for yourself? Mr. Lehman, can you start off?
Yeah, sure. It was your host earlier had talked about, Ms. Morris talked about people being in corporate America, and I was one of those people that was comfortable in corporate America. And had been in it for 20-plus years, and had always admired people that owned their own business, always admired entrepreneurs. I was in financial sales, so I was meeting a lot of different business owners from very large Fortune 500 to smaller companies. And just when I was out networking with people and doing business, always met a lot of entrepreneurs and admired them. And always thought if there would ever come a day when I could be out there on my own and owning my own business, I would take a stab at it. And we had that opportunity when my wife, who is an artist, wanted to open up her own art gallery. And we had thought, sat and thought about it a lot and decided we would do it. And we got involved and purchased a building. And as you mentioned, we do have an art gallery called Studio Clout Fine Art Gallery, an event venue in Castleberry Hill. And we haven't looked back. We've owned it for 3 years now. And what got us into it, it was just something, doing something together. My wife and I doing something together, and myself always admiring people that had their own businesses. And so that's kind of how we got started. But, you know, now that we've been in it 3 years, haven't looked back and love it. Love owning my own business and love working with people. And as the previous guest mentioned, when you look at it from serving people, it just makes it much more pleasant, and you have to have that, what I call that customer focus and that customer centricity. You have to be a person that likes learning from people. You have to be someone who is sympathetic and considerate of others, and learning how to make things happen for other people. And if you're looking to serve and help people, then you'll do well.
Wow. Awesome. Awesome. Mr. Kane, what got you started in the in real estate, sir?
Let's see. At first, I worked for a company, and I'm quick with numbers, you know, degree in engineering. And I was looking at the numbers we made in real estate and what they paid us and what the commissions was and what the back-end fees were, which, you know, I guess they didn't know we understood that. I'm like, well, you know, the company I worked for was, you know, it's gone now. It was Carteret Mortgage Company. I used to see the fees that they made and what they paid us. I'm like, wait a minute, if I close 3 loans a month, I'll make what you're paying me in 2-3 months. I mean, wait, pay me on commission. And they said, well, we don't pay commission. I'm like, well, can I do commission? No, we don't do commission. I'm like, wait a minute. So I spoke to a good mentor of mine, Rick Cook, who's passed. He's like, well, Carl, I'll tell you what you can do. I can show you how to do, you know, real estate. I'll teach you, take you under my wings, and I'll show you how to make this happen. You know, and I looked at him like, hey, okay, Rick, I'm going to go with this. You know, I want to do this. I see, based on numbers, I can make money. Knowing what I know, I make a lot of money than paying this salary, you know, this whole, and I guess like the last person said, this whole, that safety net, you know, I know if I go to work every day, I'm going to get a check every day, so the fear was like, well, you know, if I'm working for myself, I know I can make more money and pay myself, but I'm not getting that safety net, so, you know, I had to get past that fear also, and once I got past that fear and knew I could do it, I started, you know, my ups and downs, you know, you saw my ups and downs, Clark, because we worked together, I was like, hey, I never looked back.
Absolutely. And we have more ups than downs, so thank God for that.
Yeah.
Mr. Battle, you know you got to answer the question, Hinton. Have you ever worked for anyone else?
Yes, I have.
Amazing.
Yes, I have. Yes. And I realized even then. When? Let's see. The first time was a real full-time job. I was there was the right when I got married.
Hmm.
The second time was after my wife and I had our last child, but already had 2 teenage girls in the house. So I was doing myself for a long time, but when another mouth came, so you feed 5. So I had to stretch it. So I went to the job. I had that job for a good while, and it was a wonderful job because I was one of the early people. We were doing Sprint PCS in Tallahassee, and at that time, if you went outside of Capital Circle, as everybody knows, if you've been in Tallahassee, not that far, your phone didn't work. And the next time your phone worked was when you went to Jacksonville, which was 2 hours away, you went to Pensacola, or you went to Gainesville. And our quota for the month was 100 phones a month. I sold 100 phones a week. So I would just pass off the other sales to all the other young guys, and I would sit at the big window every day, and they would ask me, I said, Mr. Battle, why are you looking out the window? I said, out there is freedom.
Mm.
It was like, huh? I said, don't worry about it. Y'all don't understand. So I'll be like that.
But that wasn't your traditional job, though, Hinton. Reality is you still were somewhat of an entrepreneur spirit doing the Sprint PCS work. It still wasn't your normal 9-to-5.
You are correct, but, you know, like I said, that was
the closest you've gotten to, okay.
Yes.
To a normal job. Okay, cool. Yeah. And I must tell everyone in the room, Hinton was the first person I saw with, like, a really cool car that I thought was close to my age. It was just, And I always, you know, and he probably doesn't even know this, I always ask people questions, well, how could he do that and go to school like we do? And then I begin to learn that he really wasn't the average student, that he did have a different mindset. So, you know, when people sit back and you do things in your life and you think people aren't watching you, people are watching you and taking that example. So he is one of those examples of someone who always took risk and always went against the grain. So those of you who are listening, and even the people on the panel, know that people are always watching you and always taking your example and trying to live through that. So, again, I always have to say to people who come on this show, thank you for taking the risk to do what you do, because in our communities, there are not a lot. There are not a lot of African-American men who can go beyond how they were raised and do what you guys are doing. So I know one question I have for all of you is, what do you pass on to your children that was different than you, that made you who you are? What do you pass on to them? Or if you're the same as your parents, share that. If you had a parent that was an entrepreneur or had that spirit. Hinton, we could start with you and then go down the panel.
Well, the blessed thing I had was I'm an only child, so that kind of helped me in business. My dad got killed when I was 8. And my dad and my uncle were carpenters in Fort Myers. And as my dad got killed, my uncle went on to become a very successful contractor down in Fort Myers, built up Fort Myers, Naples, Cape Cod. He became a multimillionaire at 33. And the one thing I learned from my uncle, which I hated the most, I didn't like my uncle coming up because he would work you very hard, but he would teach you everything, and he wouldn't pay you. Now, I sure appreciate all the hard work, all the time, but all the weeks I didn't get paid, working 16, 17 hours a week, didn't get it. And I told my uncle about this, so I just want to share, sometimes we didn't understand this, was that he would give us $30 a week during the summer. So I thought I was making some money when we was going to the dance on the weekends, but I realized I was only making like 5 cents an hour. But through all that,
but the lesson you got.
The lesson I got,
yes.
I got it later. I didn't get it during the many years, but I did get it later. And it's the same thing. I think what we do, some of us who become, in terms of be successful, we sometimes give our kids a little bit too much and not let them earn the way we did. So we can hamper our kids when we get too successful.
Yeah, but, you know, the it's always that inclination to want your children to have more than what you have. So I understand that. Our next panelist, if you can answer the same question. I think it'll be Mr. Lima.
Yes, yes. You know, for me, what I'm trying to pass on to my kids is work ethic. My upbringing was blessed to come from a two-parent family where they both had strong work ethics. My mom was a waitress. My mom worked at a diner and was a waitress. And I remember as a young kid her coming home with her little bucket of nickels and dimes and quarters that she got from her tips and just counting them out and sitting at the kitchen table and counting them out with her and using that money to buy groceries and so forth. And then my dad worked in a factory. He worked the second shift from 4 to 12 at midnight, and then he'd come home and sleep for an hour and then get up and proud to say, I mean, it was a little embarrassing back then, but my father was like almost like Fred Sanford. I mean, he had his truck, and during the day he would go out and move people and do garbage, collect garbage from people, clean people's yards and all kinds of things of that nature, and do that from like 8 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, come home, have a bite to eat, take a little snooze on the sofa, and then get up and go to work at 4 o'clock and work from 4 to midnight. And he did that for years.
Wow.
And so the thing that I learned was just that whole work ethic of the family pulling together, everyone pulling their weight and contributing and working hard and having multiple jobs. And you know, what they did with that is we lived in a neighborhood where there were other multi-deckers, because I'm from the Northeast, and multi-deckers, and they then bought a couple of different properties in our neighborhood and then became, over time, because they saved their money, and that was a thing that was different that I'm trying to teach my kids, because so many children today, they just want, right? They get $10 in their pocket, and they'll spend $8 of it. And I'm trying to teach my kids how to save money and then invest it, and that's what I learned from my parents, because they saved their money. We did not live extravagantly. We always had, you know, second, third-hand cars. And then my parents started buying up property in our neighborhood, and they bought a couple other tenements, three-story and two-story, and then my parents became landlords. And we had the house we lived in, and they own a couple other homes. And that's what I'm trying to teach my kids, is to build wealth through ownership, whether it's through owning real estate, whether it's through owning your own business. And you can work maybe that corporate job, but also maybe you have something on the side that you're building while you're learning from that corporation and you're saving your money. Have something on the side that you're building in case one day, as we all know, you could get downsized at any point in time. So you may want to have that second thing that you've been working on that you can fall back on. So that's what I'm trying to teach my kids.
And that's awesome. Mr. Kane, if you can answer the same question.
Okay. I'm going to give Clark something you probably don't know about me. I got my inspiration from my mom. My dad had a degree. My mother didn't. She worked as a receptionist at a college. And she went from a receptionist at a college to getting, not a degree, but she had some kind of administrative license from that to owning her own nursing home. And I always thought that was great. And my mom, when I would work with her in the summertime, she would always work me to death. And I thought she always treated me wrong. Like, you know, she's not favoritism, but she was real. And I used to love and respect her. If something was wrong, she could point it out without getting the person upset. Like, you know, with certain rules, she's like, well, you know, come here. What's wrong with this picture? And she'd sit and talk to one regular boy, say, hey, why don't you get this fixed? And she had a nursing home where she liked to clean a certain way. And what she would do, and she'd own it. She'd come in, we'd come in on Saturdays. And she'd come in and clean the room and show the ladies how she wanted it clean. And people, they admired and respected her because she owned it, but she worked harder with them to keep the way she wanted than the people she worked for. And she never had a problem out of people. But that work that I got from McCart, because you don't know this, when I was in Missouri, I played football, and we had a small little town, I had to chop cotton to make money.
Oh,
and I think
wow.
They paid us $20 a day. We get up at 5 o'clock, and I remember this. We freeze our shoulders in the night and roll them in paper. So by noon, they'd be unthawed, but they'd still be cold. We'd take, like, Vienna sausages, sandwiches, chips, a honey bun, and we'd, like, put a sandwich in our hat. And my grandma would get up in the morning, make us breakfast, and we'd get on a truck. And it was like field hands. We'd get on a truck, we'd have a hoe, and they'd drive us to this field, and we'd work from, like, 6 to 5. At the end of the day, you make, like, $22.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at that point I never wanted to work that hard.
That
you know what I'm saying? Because, my dad said you had to have a job, and that was the only job available where I lived. So we had either picking peaches, hooking beans, pitching melons, and chopping cotton. So,
ooh, you are contrary.
So
I'm sitting here like, oh, gosh.
So from that, I taught my kids. When things were great, Clark, what I would make them do, I try to teach them how to handle money. Like, I would make each one of them pay a bill. Like, my oldest daughter had to pay the water bill. My youngest daughter had to pay my middle daughter had to pay the electric bill. And I'd have them write the check out, you know what I'm saying? I'd sign it, but I had to check out, and I'd have to take it to the place and do what they needed to do. And each month, I would give them $200, and they had an IRA account. And they'd give it to the broker, and they tell them where they wanted to put it. You know, they had like 4 stocks or 4 things they can put it in. And they might put $50 here, $20 there, $30, whatever. And each one of them would grow at a different rate because I think my youngest daughter, for some reason, she would pick better than my oldest daughter. And she had a little bit more in her account than my oldest daughter. And she would ask me why. I'm like, well, because she's picking different things than you are, you know what I'm saying, different stocks. So I just try to teach them how to deal with money because, again, even though I worked, I didn't have a checking account until I was in college. You see what I'm saying? So I wanted them to understand how to deal with money before they got out of the house so I could teach them
right.
how to handle it before they got out and had to learn on their own. So,
wow.
You know, the powerful thing that I'm learning here, and I don't know if hopefully everyone is catching this, is that all three of our guests today have talked about work ethics and
yes.
how hard they committed themselves at an early age to that process, and it has paid dividends for them later on in life. So, when I'm going around talking to people, that is inspiring because now I know what I can really focus and get these young minds entitled to. Mr. Lima, I wanted to just ask you, and I know we're, Kim, I know you, I know you're looking at the game. We got a little time left, but I want to get this in. Mr. Lima, what would you say is step one in getting started? For someone out there who's listening to this show and is being inspired to maybe do what they thought they couldn't do, what is step one to getting started?
Well, for me, I guess, you know, the first thing I would tell anyone is it's got to be passion, passion for something first. Don't jump into something that you don't have a passion for, because that's gonna keep you going when you have those down days. To have a passion for whatever it is you want to get into, that's the first thing. Before you get started with deciding what kind of business entity you're going to be, whether an LLC, sole proprietorship, or whatever you're going to do, before you do anything along those lines, sit and think long hard about what your passions are in life, the things you really love to do, and follow that, because that's where you're going to have the longevity in whatever you choose to do. Because as I said, if you have the passion for something, you're going to have a lot of down days as an entrepreneur and a business owner. And if you don't have the passion for what you're doing, you're never going to get through.
And I just want to tag on and say, you obviously exhibit that, you and your wife, because your gallery is you know, it's amazing. It's one of my favorite spots to go to. And I just want you to just let everybody know where that gallery is again, the address and house and your website, if you would, please.
Sure. The gallery is called Studio Clout Fine Art Gallery and Event Venue, and it's Clout, C-L-O-U-T. We're located at 144 Walker Street in Atlanta, just outside of downtown. I can walk from our front door to the Dome or to Phillips Arena. We're in Castleberry Hill, and we are an art gallery that will have a new exhibit up every 5 or 6 weeks, and we're also now an event venue, so we have a lot of different types of events. We rent out the space for events from book signings to business cocktail receptions, fashion shows, product launch parties and listening parties, so all sorts of things that we rent the facility out for. If you're looking for a unique space, an art gallery to hold an event, and we do a multitude of other things. We had a summer arts program, 6-week intensive drawing class for middle school and high school students. We have an open studio on every Tuesday night for artists to come in and practice their figure drawing. So we do a multitude of things at the gallery. And we look forward to you coming out. Matter of fact, if anyone is interested, come out this Friday. Each second Friday in that area, because there are other art galleries, do a second Friday art stroll. We're going to be introducing a new artist this Friday between 7 and 10. And part of the exhibit, not only are you going to see this woman's phenomenal 3D work that she does, but we also provide performance art. So we're going to have some spoken word and poetry readings, and we're going to have a couple of young ladies going to come in and sing some songs a cappella. So it's going to be a really fun evening.
Perfect, perfect. Battle One, Mr. Hayden, what is the company about, and tell us how we can get in touch with you.
Battle One is mainly an apparel company, and also do promotion and marketing. We do special events. My business partner's in Philadelphia. We do a lot of concerts, old school concerts to hip hop genre. But I like doing a lot of consulting of helping people grow with businesses more than anything else. So I'm trying to transcend my business to the thing about after the first year. All I want to do is teach people how to get on this road to success. And the one thing I want to interject on the part about getting started is, to me, one of the best ways to get started, anything you want to do in life, find someone who's doing something that you would like to do. And I think that's one of the things people miss in life. You know what I mean? If you want to be something, you want to be a dentist, talk to a dentist. You know what I mean? If you want to be a truck driver, talk to a truck driver. Don't talk to, you know, the person that fixed the telephone, even though they've got the same type of business practices, but if you want to be something, you got to find something. This last thing I want to throw out real quick is that it was like I was in a business meeting, and this guy asked, say, if someone dropped you all off in the middle of the jungle, what would you do? And everybody came up with these all ideas. And I just told the guy, listen, I'm looking for a guide. I need somebody to help me get out of the jungle who's already been there. So I'm just saying, if you want to be successful, come to successful.
And Mr. K, Sky Breeze, how can somebody wanted to get interested in talking to you about either real estate or getting into real estate, how best would they reach you?
You know what? Website is going up, skybreezecorp.com. But basically, what we're tailoring, what my company we're tailoring to now is putting people in homes with money. If you have the income, but you don't have the credit score, because we understand a lot of people have money and their credit score are not what they should be right now. Okay, but if you have the ability to pay for a property, Clark, you know, like most people have now with everything going bad, and like I said, we bought a 42 unit development, and all we're doing are the bank owner finance. Simple as that. If you got $2,500 down and you can pay the rent, and that's no problem, you can get the house. We don't care about anything else. We don't care about what your grandmama did. We don't care what you did. We don't care if you, you know, you can't rent a loaf of bread. If you have income and we look at it and you can pay for this house, you have $2,500 down, that is your house. Not you're not renting the house, you're not leasing the house. The house is going in your name. We're closing the loan. We'll give you the keys. It's your property.
Wow.
And that's what we're doing. We're trying to find owners under the circumstances that we know everyone can't qualify for loans. We understand that things might have happened, but we know good, right there, bad things happen to good people, and we understand that. Trying to do with
and what,
get you in a
what's
home,
your email address?
SkyBreezeCorp@gmail.com.
There you go.
Hey, Clark,
awesome and amazing.
John Lima from Studio Cloud. I don't know if I mentioned our website. It's studioclout.com is the website, and then the email address is studioclout@comcast.net.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kim, you want to take us on home?
Yes. I just want to thank everyone who is listening, and we hope that you've gotten some great information from these phenomenal men in our community. Again, we hope that you have taken down their information. If you need anything from them, I know they're all willing and ready to serve and help anyone who wants to be where they are. So, again, thank you guys. We talked about entrepreneurship. Oh, one of the things I do want to mention, Clark Garrison, he's really modest about some of the things that he's doing. He has a new program that's called Barbershop Talk. Well, he'll be going to barbershops, and the conversation that we just had, that's the type of conversation that he is going to have with African-American men where they are, which is in barbershops most weekends, you know, weekend nights or what have you. So if you guys are interested, if you have a shop that you're interested in becoming a part of the program, you know, contact us at www.survivethenext365.com. This is a perfect segue into that program because what I stated before, this is exactly what we'll be doing with Barbershop Talk, not only talking about African-American men becoming entrepreneurs, but providing you with resources like these three, you know, phenomenal gentlemen that can help you if you have gotten stuck or you don't know where to go. So, again, www.survivethenext365.com. If you're interested in Barbershop Talk, go to the contacts page and send us a note, and we'll be glad to contact you and let you know some more details. With that, Clark, I just want to thank you again. This is a great conversation. We'll be doing it again in the next 2 weeks. We are every other week, Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with the conversation. Do you have anything to close out?
Well, I just want to thank our guests. All of you have contributed so much valuable information, including our great panel and Mr. Damon Coleman, who we spoke with earlier. I just want to, last but not least, thank everybody who, and this is on a personal note, has supported me. As some of you may know, my mother's health is not the best. And so all of the prayers that have been given and all the great calls, I want to just thank you formally and personally dedicating the show to my mother.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you next time on The Conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.